horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
A very good Wednesday, race fans, Series 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevevick.com. A bright, sunny, coldish winter morning here as the first month of 2020 begins to wane. February looming large, and actually I just realized, looking at the calendar, I'm just realizing for the second year in a row, right? Because Groundhog Day would have been on a Saturday last year. So I guess I think maybe last year Casey and I slipped in a couple of our of our either highly anticipated or reviled Groundhog Day audio clips. I can tell you, Tina hates it. Tina just does not get it. And in fact, as much as I,
you know what?
There it is. There's our Groundhog Day. That's the bit. You're saying to yourself, wait a minute, they're playing yesterday's tape. we were because I'd love to tell you that I'm live at Clocker's Corner, except that I'm not. I am live, however, from the J. Hovde chair, sort of like at a college, the Hovde chair in the press box at Santa Anita. For some reason, the Clocker's Corner line wasn't live. So I could tell you that I adroitly shifted over to the press box, but that's not so simple because you got to quickly pack up the materials and then it's all the way at the other end of the building. So happy to be here as always at Santa Anita. A little different because I've certainly never broadcast from up here, and I can't even recall. I think on an occasion, you know, the Breeders' Cup, I'll come up and say hello to, say hello to everybody. But I'm not. They pick up media badges and stuff, but I don't get up here all that often. So it's kind of fun, and very quiet. Although with Clocker's Corner, there was a nice crowd. I was looking forward to. I absolutely wanted to reach Mark Glatt, and we had expected that we would have sat down with Bob Baffert. So we'll reboot and we'll reorganize and pull things together. Great to be here for the next four broadcast days, and of course for the weekend in advance of going to Las Vegas for the NHC. And yesterday, of course, the draws across the country for the Saturday cards, and most notably the three-year-old action, and going to have Steve Haskin in here early, as it happens. Steve's got an obligation, so we won't waste a lot of time getting to Steve. And unfortunately, Tony had to scratch. So from this point, we'll figure things out. But Steve Haskin will join us right away because I want Steve's gut reaction to the fields that came together for the Lewis, the Holy Bull, and the Withers. And there's certainly central horses to each of them. The Withers that we actually had hinted about quite a bit with Andy and just in passing anyway, the Withers is very engaging. Todd Pletcher mentioning Portos when we talked to him on Tuesday, but Monday morning QB, Monday morning quarterback, 24 hours before all the Monday morning quarterbacks will dissect the Super Bowl. But Butchie Reed for Cash is King and Partners, and the Imagining colt looks okay. First time around two turns, so that's that question to answer. Going the mile in the eighth. Linda Rice was considering a couple of different contenders, and she ended up going with both Max Player and Prince of Pharaohs. Prince of Pharaohs, second in the Jerome. A good second in the Jerome. Portos, who you know about. Michael Pino showed up with that Van Zee coming off of the end of the season win in the display. And then there's a bit of an unknown face, Diane Day, with a Field Commission colt, of all things, that she owns. New Commission. A Georgia bred. Good story there. The horse that was second to Monday Morning Quarterback in the Heft after romping in the maiden breaker at Parks, stretching out two turns. So the Withers kind of surprised, I think, in terms of what is on offer. And you go down to Gulfstream, that ended up being, I think, a bit of a surprise because a couple of the horses that had been expected didn't show up. But 'tis the law, certainly going to, you know, be the center of conversation. And then there's six to face. And Patrick Biancone did have that other three-year-old, Ete Indienne. Chad Brown, Toledo, drew the rail, coming off an allowance drive behind Ete Indienne. Greenlight Ghosh shows up for his seasonal debut in the Swale. And I know, I guarantee you that Haskin loves that, kicking off with the 7/8 start. And this ends up being the launch point for Mark Cassie and Gary Barber and Michael Sebastian's Untitled, the Kozan Colt. So impressive in the debut mid-December and makes the three-year-old debut here. That was a 6-furlong romp. They got a 98 buyer. So in addition to the Holy Bull down at Gulfstream, you've also got the Swale going short, and you've also got the Dania Beach on the grass for the three-year-old. So it came up nice, and the Swedish chant as well. I'll be using those races probably all for the Beat the Host. And then out here at Santa Anita, six of them, and it feels like a good competitive Bob Lewis. 1,000 words headlines, but here's Tis a Magician, who we talked about with Mandela. Baffert also comes with High Velocity, that Royal Act for Peter Urton, Encoder for Sadler, and who am I missing? Zimba Warrior for Keith DeSormo, another Kozan, third in the Sham. So lots of three-year-old action that we've been looking forward to. And Deja, what I'm going to suggest to you is go ahead and get Steve Haskin. Might as well get him now and just dive in, if you would, as I try to get organized after an on-the-fly. I was thrilled to get here as quickly as I did. I gave up trying to fix what was going on down at Clocker's Corner. I gave up pretty quickly. I realized this is not happening. So quickly checked with Mike Willman about coming to the press box. He said, of course, it's open. Get to go over there. So that's what we did, and here we are. And if I get to the computer quickly, or the phone, and so I know what's going on, maybe, yeah, the Hammer's making me laugh. Hammer's been checking in too. He was ready to swing into action. He was ready to rattle some cages. He probably could have called some people that weren't even aware that he's, that he could probably, the authority figure could probably still pull the strings. I love it. We should mention too, that speaking of Oaklawn and Rick, and obviously we'll talk tomorrow, the Cross Country Pick 5 comes back tomorrow, Saturday at at NYRA, the 8th and the 9th in New York, the Withers and the Nightcap, and then the 7th, 8th, and 9th at Oaklawn. And I understand that they thought there was going to be a TV broadcast on Saturday, but it's been canceled. I guess they've got something. There's something on Fox Sports 2 that makes for a time constraint. So I don't know if they're going to start. I can't tell you when they're going to start beyond that. And the good news is, though, that the pick five, the cross country pick five with a low takeout, is locked in. So 8th and 9th from Aqueduct, 7th, 8th, and 9th from Oaklawn, which includes the Martha Washington. And you've been tracking Taraz. The next filly that is going to win the Derby, apparently. Steve Haskin, good morning. Steve, there we go. I couldn't hear you.
I didn't say anything.
Oh, well then, all right.
I was listening to silence.
Okay, well, all right. Now there's an interchange. Steve, I had to do some fancy footwork to pull things together here this morning. You're heading to Connecticut, right?
I am.
Very good.
Almost as nice as L.A.
Well, I got to say, got in last night, and I will make a quick point because everybody that remembers from December the trip from hell, which was the first time I'd ever had the series of misadventures that got me here. I never got to Pasadena to the hotel until like 3 a.m.
I forgot what happened.
Everything. There was just one delay after another. Then the rental car issue. I mean, the trip took like 14 hours. It was just crazy. But this trip today, yesterday.
You didn't pull a Steve Martin in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. No, but they
pulled it on me. I go to leave, and they said, oh, wait, you can't take this car. It's due for an oil change. I said, oh, Jesus, all right.
So okay, I'll just give me a few minutes, and I'll take care of it.
Exactly. You want synthetic, or do you want the 10W30? So I had to turn back around, and then it was a whole to-do. We only have pickup trucks. What do you – pickup trucks. So anyway, but this one – yesterday we were – it was crazy. We were early to Baltimore, and then we were like almost an hour early into LAX. And just – although you can appreciate this, Steve, being from New York and from Brooklyn. I kid you not, there must have been – 50 Hasidic families on the flight from Baltimore here. I turned to somebody. I said, "Are we going to L.A. or Tel Aviv?" It was the craziest. I wanted to ask what I said. Where's everybody going?
I kid you not. You feel safe at least to have so many people that close to God on the plane with you.
But it was just odd. I kept looking. I said, there it is. The young husband and wife and seven children. There was one
that had two. They're allowed to travel too.
No doubt about it. Well, my mother,
they might be out there with you this morning. They might be out of San Diego this morning.
There could be a davening out here.
Robert B. Lewis trip.
Well, not annual. This one kind of cropped up. This was at the suggestion of Jay Privman, who had the inspired idea. We were talking about NHC in Vegas. He said, "When's your next California trip?" I said, "Well, I'm going to Vegas." He said, "Well, why don't you just come a couple days early for the Lewis?" I said, "You know what? I'm going to do that."
Okay.
So that was the inspiration. Yeah, it made perfect sense. So we're here till Tuesday, and then we'll be at Bally's for NHC. And in fact, this morning I put up a picture that everybody has responded to. 4 years ago today, Paul Matisse, won his NHC championship. And I got a great picture after we finished the show and finished him talking and with his dad. And I took like one of those celebratory pictures, and I that popped up on my timeline on Facebook. So I put it on Twitter, and everybody loves it. And Paul will try to be Paul, and Bacik and quite a few others will try to be the first repeat NHC winner. See if we can get a second one. But it's more fun, I think, if you get all individual winners.
It's hard to win two.
That's for
Super
sure.
Bowls.
Well,
by the way,
in fact,
did you hire a security guard while you've been away so long to guard your kitchen?
Wait, this is nothing. This is a warm-up trip for March, April, when Tina's going to lose her mind. I mean, I'm going to be gone 5 weeks.
5 weeks?
Five straight weeks, yeah. There was just no way around it. There was just a couple of things that made it impossible to come home, so...
Can I officially consider you a celebrity?
Being on the road for 5 weeks, believe me, is not that doesn't elevate a candidacy.
Well, you're on the road because everybody wants you.
Nah, I'm on the road because that's where it's where the action is. We got the HBPA convention. We've got a couple of trips, and that happens to be at Hot Springs, so I get to go to Oaklawn twice. Then we've got. New Orleans. I got to go to the Louisiana Derby this year instead of Risen Star. That was a shift. So there was a few little things.
Stuff.
Yeah. And then when I finish at Oaklawn, it's funny. I finish at Oaklawn for HBPA. Then I come here for Santa Anita Derby week and then back to Hot Springs for Arkansas Derby week. So it's going to be an odyssey.
I'm exhausted just listening. I remember the old days when you'd make one, maybe two trips a winter. Now, it's goodbye Greenwich. I almost committed the card.
You almost said Greenwich. I almost said Greenwich. Well, no, Tina, I will be home for Valentine's Day, and we will make in fact, Tina said to me we were talking last night when I was in Baltimore. She said, when am I picking you up? I said, Monday the 10th. And she said, oh, good, all right. So Valentine's Day? I said, do you want me to make a nice dinner? She goes, yes, I don't even want to go out. So she wants a Valentine's dinner at home. So I've christened the kitchen already quite a bit.
Well, don't burn anything with all those new appliances.
Well, the stove takes some getting used to. I got to tell you, the working with a gas stove, I've never had. I've only ever had electric or those you know sealed top ones. There's a little bit of
most people want gas. A lot of people
don't
cook unless it's gas.
The
professional chef would never ever think of cooking on an electric stove.
I know, but you know when you've been cooking for you know 40 years.
I agree with you. We have electric. I don't want no fire shooting out of my stove.
Well, that's the exactly. No, but I'm getting there. I'm getting used to it. So,
well, you must have gotten up early today.
I actually by getting here late, by taking the nightish flight and getting here 10, 11 o'clock, it actually is a positive because you don't get to bed till 11:30 or midnight or 1. And so you're already, you're sort of immersed immediately into the time shift that I need anyway for the show. So
might as well just go right to the racetrack, right from the just check into the hotel and head right.
Well,
the...
I almost did that last time. I came very all I did was shower. Back in December. Well, looking ahead, we could start. I suppose before we start with the three preps as well as the swale, because I'm sure you're excited about what's going on with Greenlight Go and in his kickoff and Untitled.
I will give you that idea.
but let me ask you quick, Smarty Jones, thoughts.
Well, you know, I don't know how good the winner is, obviously. I think he had everything his own way on that racetrack. But, you know, the horse I had ranked in the top 12, you know, the only horse I had in the top 12 that had never run in the stake, Three Technique, I thought ran an excellent race. I was very very happy with his race, considering that it was his first time in a stakes race. He was up against seasoned stakes winners. First time around two turns in the mud, a speed-favoring track. Came home, you know, certainly fast enough. I like the way he was running in the stretch. And the most important thing is I like the fact that he pulled. I'm forgetting about the horse that won. He was out, you know, on up by himself, and he went off and maintained the same margin at the, you know, at the wires he had at the eighth pole. But Three Technique pulled away from the others. He actually opened up 2 1/4 lengths on Shoplifted, you know, who's a stakes winner, Silver Prospector was another 2 lengths farther back from him. So I like the fact that that he pulled away from those horses, and he's only going to get better. So I'm looking for big improvement for him. And not only that, but his third ref numbers jumped from a 8.5 to a 2 3/4. So that 2 3/4, maybe it was 8 3/4 to 2.5. That puts him right there. That puts him right there with the best horses. If you can run 2.5 in January on Thoroughgraph, you know, with still room for improvement, then to me he's a very serious Derby horse. You know, as far as the others, I never really looked at Shoplifted as really a 1 1/4 horse. I mean, he might be, but there's a question with his pedigree. And Silver Prospector looked like he never handled that racetrack, so you know, certainly give him another shot.
Well, and as Steve Asmussen said, because I asked him, you know, about the other two, and he, that racetrack, the way it was opening day, anybody that, you know, was going to try to close was compromised. If you were wide and if you were coming from off the pace, you were in dread.
Right. I mean, listen, the winner might be a very nice horse. I mean, he looked good. You know, he's stretching out from a sprint, but he was a, you know, stakes winner. And I don't know how far he wants to go, but if I'm going to look for a Derby horse coming out of there, it certainly would be Three Technique.
Well, they'll move forward toward the Southwest. Although it was notable that Steve more or less said, you know, even the Oaklawn-based ones, you know, he would shop opportunities and make some decisions about moving around and where he might, you know, fairgrounds and suddenly.
Yeah, when you have 30 Derby horses, you got to start moving them around.
Exactly.
I mean, if you ask him to go over his Derby horses, it would take up the entire show. I mean, he's got them everywhere. He's got them coming out of the woodwork. I think he had, there were three between the stakes and two maiden races. He had seven horses in those three races. I mean, he's all over the place. I mean, he's at every racetrack. He's in every single race, running multiple horses. I mean, I've never seen anybody. You know, I've seen years where, you know, Pletcher's had, you know, a lot. I've never seen as many as Asmussen. I mean, they're all, I'm not saying they're all legitimate Derby horses. Obviously, most of them aren't. But as far as embarking on the Derby trail,
right?
He's got an awful lot of 3-year-olds all over the place. You just lose track of them. But I don't know how he would feel about, if he's looking ahead to the Derby, I'm sure he would love to have seen, you know, Silver Prospector win. He would look, you know, more like a Derby horse than the winner. But again, you don't know. You got the other horse has to show that he's not one-dimensional. You know, we already know what Silver Prospector can do.
Well, we got to find out quite a bit about the cast, Steve, on the weekend based on these lineups. And let's start in Florida, and then we'll work our way west and get the two races at Gulfstream discussed. And I know next week when Storm the Court comes out for the San Vicente, you'll be pleased and excited that he's starting at 7/8. And here's the same story with Green Light Go, and Untitled gets a chance to jump in.
Doesn't take much to get me excited.
Yeah.
So, well, listen, the one thing about these races is that they're all guesses. I mean, we really have no idea how good these horses are. You have so many horses moving up. The only horse you're really sure about, or at least you think you're sure about, is Tis the Law, you know, who should be a, you know, pretty solid favorite in here. The crazy thing is that Tis the Law is coming off a third in the Kentucky Jockey Club, and the two horses that finished in front of him both came back to run fourth, but the horse that finished behind him in fourth came back to win the LeCompte. So you know, it's really hard to me. I take a positive out of that. That you know, Enforceable, who he beat, came back and ran big. And again, like I said, I give Silver Prospector a gimme on this one. And I thought Ferret the Fierce actually ran a pretty good race in there. Well, considered he came from far out of it. He's got the problem. You don't like to see a horse with one eye, breaking from the inside. And, he winds up circling the field, which he wants to do. But you can see he's a little unsure of himself, I think, with experience. But he closed well. He finished fourth. It was a good fourth. So I think he's a really nice horse. He'll be this year's patch, especially with his name. You know, it sounds like Finnick the Fierce sounds like a horse that Mickey Rooney would ride in some 1940s racing movie. You know, so, I mean, everybody will latch onto this horse if he starts doing something. But, yeah, I think Tis the Law definitely is the horse to beat, but the other horses we just don't know about. I mean, do we know how good Ette Indiana is? I mean, coming off the turf, he ran huge, for Patrick Bianconi when he won an allowance race at Gulfstream, and you run a mile in 135 flat, and that's running, and the horse that he beat, Toledo, who's in this race, he was coming off a very impressive maiden win. I'm sure Chad Brown, obviously was high on him. He's been favorite in all three of his races, never run worse than second. So he's coming back again. And, he's more of a come-from-behind horse. At the Indian, won his race on the front end. So, Toledo, how far he wants to go, into mischief on top, but he's out of a Bernardini mare, at the Indian, summer front. You start looking at these young stallions who are by proven stallions. He's out of a Mizzen Mass. I mean, he's certainly not fashionably bred, but Patrick Bianconi is always dangerous. So we'll have to see with him. And, it's the same thing with a lot of these horses. Uncork the Bottle. Safi Joseph, by the way, he's turning into the newest sensation. I mean, he's got so many good horses, all over the place himself. He's really developing a very powerful stable. But, this horse, do we really know how good he is? I mean, he's undefeated in three starts. He's starting off like Maximum Security, by romping in a $16,000 maiden claiming race. And he gets claimed out of it, and he's won two big races. But, they were both starter optional claim, allowance claimers. So he's been running against nothing but claimers in his races. So he has to, make a pretty big move, up. Again, they're all, clear destinations coming up from turf and polytrack. And he's run nine times already. You need to go down a list and you can say, do we really, really know what these horses are going to do? You just don't know. Look at a horse like Relentless Dancer. He's romped in his last two. He looked very good at Churchill Downs, ran a very fast time, going six furlongs, and then he romped at Delta Downs against Louisiana Breds. So, with Louisiana Breds, again, you just don't know what kind of competition he's meeting. And then the Kenningman Peaks got a horse, and last summer I don't even know if he even knew much about this horse because he never mentioned him. His Mayberry deputy. Who's coming off a very strong victory, and after that, it finished second to Gold Street. The horse that won the Smarty Jones, and he also in that maiden race, he beat a horse named Major Fed, who I think eventually, watch out for that horse. He's going to be a very, very good horse. I mean, he broke his maiden extremely impressively at Fairgrounds, and they're going to wait until a recent star with him. But this horse has got an absolute ton of stamina. He's a little slow right now, but he could be a Belmont horse. But anyway, he finished ahead of Major Fed. So we really don't know how good Major Deputy is. So basically the theme is we really don't know, other than Tis the Law, we really don't know how good any of these horses are. So, you know, if you're betting this race, to me, it's strictly a tote board race to bet. You just have to see who looks like they had a good price. Because if Tizzalore doesn't win, anybody I just mentioned could win. And it's not going to come as a surprise. You know, I mean, they got, you know, you got a former claimer, you got a Louisiana bred, you got horses coming off the grass. It's all a crapshoot. You like anybody in here?
Well, I haven't. You know, I was on the plane, so I didn't even get a chance to print until, you know, and look mm-hmm. at the BPs until this morning. But, you know, this is all about Tis the Law and, you know, getting off on, you know, the right foot and, you know, erasing the difficulties from the Kentucky Jockey Club. I like that Barkley and Jack Knowlton and the team didn't, you know, hold Manny Franco, you know, responsible to the point of taking him off the horse. So I'd like to see him, frankly. He's exciting. He's a New York bred. There's a lot to like about it. And we'll see who steps forward from the rest of the group. But to be honest,
he's giving away weight, too. So we have to know, he's giving away, 4 pounds and 6 pounds.
Yeah, no, which is not insignificant this time of year with the 3-year-olds. Let's turn to the swale, and I do also, because there's so much to do, Steve, I don't want people to miss out that, and I didn't get a chance to ask Todd about Palm Springs on Tuesday, but Palm Springs shows up in that maiden race going a mile after mm-hmm. the debut where he ran well by
Violet
City. He ran okay.
At one point, it didn't look like he was doing much, but, you know, like a lot of Pletchers do, you know, he started picking it up at the end. I thought it was a good enough
race. It was
a useful
debut.
Very workmanlike.
And there's some interesting things going on in that maiden race, and then even the second race early on the card. I'll just point out Kieran McLaughlin's got an $800,000 Shadwell that debuts in here. Mark Hennig, who's had whose horses, it seemed like Mark, I don't know if he's running better in New York, and he's only 1-for-16 at the meet, but it felt like his horses were running well. Conformity, a Don Adam $200,000 honor code. Take a look there. Jimmy Jerkins debuts one for Chiefswood, a homebred by Curlin called Edge of Fire. The Hennig
Fletcher's
got Ellis
Island too.
Though.
You know, we don't know he's
on the rail.
First start. He had one bullet workout at Palm Beach Downs. So we'll take charge. We'll have to see how good he is. But again, you said, I don't know how good the Karen McLaughlin horse is.
The name is Ajar.
Ajar, yeah. But, you know, it's a tappet. So, we'll have to see how good it is. The main thing is, unlike the other maiden race, it's a 6-furlong race.
Right.
So,
it's a little late.
Even whoever wins this race is still going to be behind the eight ball. I mean, it's still going to be tough getting to the Derby when you break your maiden at 6 furlongs in early February.
So, no doubt.
Anything can be done now. You know, we saw what Justify did, but Justify started off at a longer distance. But, you know, I don't know if there's any Justifies in here. So, whoever wins this race, you're talking about, you're going to go into the Derby off of 3 starts? You know, one of them, 6 furlongs? It's just going to be tough on these horses. You know, looking at the other maiden race, which is at a mile, you know, and you've had some horses who have started already. You know, it's not a particularly strong field, but like you said, you know, we'll just see how Palm Springs can do in his second start. I would imagine he'll be a pretty big favorite. I don't think I remember the horse that beat him, that Violent City. It looks like he could be a very, very nice horse.
That's the Ian Wilkes Violence Colt. I just wonder, you know, people. We'll get the clocking report, we'll talk to Mike Welch tomorrow about the maidens, the unraced particularly, and people may take liberties with Ellis Island.
Very good.
Steve, a quick hit at the swale. We got Green Light Go, we've got Untitled, and, both, I think it adds a lot of intrigue. Untitled starting his three-year-old season in this spot for Cassie and Gary Barber. And green light go. Same thing, kind of same storyline as Tis the Law, where he's trying to shake off what was perceived at the time as a big disappointment in the Champagne.
Yeah, well, the thing about green light go is that Junior Alvarado, I mean, didn't do the horse any favors putting him on a lead. That was, I spoke to Jimmy Durkins after the race. He was not too happy about that. I mean, this is a horse, I know he showed speed in his first start. That was going 5.5. But, you know, then he finally got the horse to relax in the Saratoga Special, and he laid back in fifth, and he made a nice run and one drawing away. And then he goes, you know, he stretches out to a mile, and you figure he'll, you know, sit back off the pace again. And when he, and then not only he goes to the front, you know, in pretty testing fractions, 22 and change and 46 flat. But, you know, he's under pressure the entire way. So, yeah, you know, I'm not going to hold that race against him. I just didn't think it was a very good ride. But, you know, running in a sprint, again, it's not a race he has to win. He's not one of the faster horses in the race. Let's put it this way. You know, if you start looking at speed figures, Mischievous Alex is faster, Untitled is faster. Even Ralph Nix's horse, Chivalry has got a really, really fast race at Gulfstream Park. I mean, he went 6 furlongs and 109.4 and got a 104 speed figure on Equibase. But Mischievous Alice is coming off a huge win at Parks. Got a big number there, a 103, and Untitled got a 102, winning pretty easily. You know, we really don't know who he beat or what he beat and really how good he is. He's got speed in his pedigree, but he also has some stamina, so we'll be able to see how he does at the extra furlong. But, you know, green light goes numbers are, nowhere near that. So, you know, it's not going to surprise me if he gets beat. I just want to see a good sharpener. You know, listen, Jimmy Jenkins could very easily have put him in the Holy Bull, but he's not really a fan of two-turn races at Gulfstream. He finds them kind of quirky. But he's going to have to run in them because of who owns the horse, which Christ Gronick owns the horse, so he can't just, you know, stay away from Gulfstream. So, you know, when it starts getting time for the Fountain of Youth and Florida Derby, he'll have to stretch out there. But I know he's not a big fan of the two-turn races, because two-turn races at Gulfstream Park can get, like I said, kind of quirky. But again, you know, if he's closing in the race, and you just got to take him back. There's no way in the world he's going to go to the front in this race. So we'll see what he does. You know, and then you got so many unknowns. You know, here we go again with with another claimer. You know, his flash pass. They throw him in a 12-5 claimer, and he wins by 12 lengths and gets claimed out of it. So I mean, obviously it's a huge step up there, but. You know, listen, after Maximum Security, we just don't know anymore. But, you know, we don't know how, you know, these trainers, a lot of these trainers have absolutely no clue what they have. So, you know, they put them in these races and then they romp, and then you can't be shocked if they come back and do something. Because the most likely, I mean, there's a good chance a lot of these aren't, you know, claimers in the first place. They were just misplaced by the trainer. You know, and then another interesting horse in here is this Necker Island. You know, if you go back, if you look at the race that Silver State won, ran last time in Lecompte, I mean, that was a huge, huge race he ran. And this horse beat him in those, in that 1 mile allowance race at Churchill Downs on that, in that big day when they have nothing but 2-year-old races and a lot of the top 2-year-olds come out. So, you know, he's won two in a row. You know, he ran a 99 a speed figure in that race. So this is his first start since. And we'll see what he does. Stanley Huff is always dangerous. So it's kind of an interesting interesting race here.
Agreed. 3-year-olds are on display, you know, pretty much all day long. You got the Dania Beach for the boys on the grass, the Swedish Chant for the girls. You got the Forward Gal sprinting for the 3-year-old fillies, who are, boy, the 3-year-old fillies, a hungry bunch. Steve, let's turn.
Don't,
our
ignore, by the way, don't ignore that Dania Beach. You know, you got
I love the Dania Beach.
Yeah. You know, you know, this horse South Bend, they had thought really high of him. I mean, yep. He had gone off as a favorite, you know, big favorite in two races, and he won them both. And then, you know, he disappointed in his last two starts, you know, in the Kentucky Jockey Club and in the Mucho Macho Man. So they're trying to turf with him. If he runs well, you know, he's basically bred for the dirt. But if he runs well on Dany Beach, yeah, there aren't that many, you know, grass races. You know, they might be tempted to say, okay, maybe that race woke him up and put him back on there. But a lot of these horses, if they run well, you know, a horse like Homeland that, you know, Bill Mott has, that, you know, he's going to try these horses on the turf. You know, any of these horses that run well, if they got the slightest inkling of dirt in their pedigree, there's a very good chance that that these horses are going to, you know, try the dirt. You know, this horse, Miaminol, he ran huge last time on the grass. But, you know, he's bred for both grass and dirt. It depends on, what you know, whether they want to take a shot with these horses. But I wouldn't be surprised, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised to see a horse or two, if they run really big in the Dany Beach, to, you know, come back and try it. It's been done before.
Now, the Gargan
horse.
Bellahan
might have run in this race and then came back and obviously ran third.
I think that's correct. No, I love the Dania Beach, and I love Dania Beach as a town. Go to Bake Shop in Dania Beach, everybody, and of course the home of Jackson's, the ice cream parlor.
The entire menu there,
and Grandpa's too, which is a great breakfast joint. Steve, let's talk about the Withers, because I think of these races. I mean, certainly the smallish field out here in the Lewis, which we'll get to, is good and is filled with some quality. But the Withers is the race that kind of, when you went through it, you realized, wow, this is kind of an interesting collection of horses that have been sort of, you know, playing in the provinces, as it were. And it includes a Georgia bred. You were worried about Louisiana breds? How about a Georgia bred?
I know. Well, the thing is about this race, it reminds me a little, actually, of the Holy Bull. You know, I mean, you've got a proven horse in here in Shotsky. Then you have all these horses, you know, these weird horses coming from little different places, and that we have absolutely no clue how good they are. You know, if you start looking at the speed figures, you know, this Monday morning QB, and, you know, this is a, you know, Cash's King stable. They've got you know, several. They have a horse. Well, they had that Mischievous Alex, so they, you know, they got a contender in the Swale, and they've got a contender in here. But he's coming off of two, you know, very nice victories, you know, at Parks and at Laurel. He won the Heft Stakes, and people say, "Oh, what the heck's the Heft Stakes?" Well, remember the Heft Stakes last year was the race that Win popped up in and went on the Derby Trail. Well, I was extremely high on him, and I don't know whatever happened to him, but he turned out to be, I thought, a very legitimate Derby horse. But this Monday morning QB is I find him extremely interesting in here.
I agree.
You know, Max Player, you got Linda Rice running a horse. You know, the horse has run twice in both at Parks, you know, and run well both times. Last race was a very powerful race. Came from off the pace and won drawing away in the slop, you know, to break his maiden. But it's a horse, you know, by honor code. So I don't, you know, why she ran him at Parks, I have no idea. But if you notice, by the way, a lot of trainers are going, even a Pletcher now. A lot of trainers are going to Parks. We're getting a lot of horses, a lot of nice horses coming out of Parks. And then you had the horse that finished second in the Heft Stakes. This new commission that was coming off a monster maiden victory at Parks, but so, you know, came back and was closing fast at the end of that race. So again, we have no clue how good that horse is. You know, I really don't. You know, Shotsky, like Tinsel Law, has given away weight, but Yeah, I don't know what to make of the Remsen. You know, if I'm looking at the Remsen right now, I would lean towards the runner-up in that race, Ajaweed, who's been working very well, who's I think is going to be a really nice horse for Karen McLaughlin. But, you know, Shotsky went out there and set incredibly slow fractions on, you know, on a dead race track, which they always are at Aqueduct in the fall. And, you know, he had his own way, opened up, and, you know, was really getting laid at the end when Ajaweed was closing up a lot of ground on him. So again, I don't know how good he is. And then of course we'll get some kind of gauge on Independence Hall because the horse that he beat last time, Prince of Pharaohs, comes back in here, and he actually ran a pretty good race. You know, he got beat four lengths by Independence Hall. A lot of people have in their top five Derby horses, and Prince of Pharaohs finished 11 lengths ahead of the third horse in that race. No, excuse me, he didn't finish 11 lengths. So I think the Dead Heat is something to think of it. The Dead Heat has finished 11 lengths ahead of the next horse. But this horse could be any kind. He was very impressive breaking his maiden. So, you know, he's another New York bred. And then you come to Vansy, again, coming off a really nice victory over the Poly track at Woodbine, ran at Parks last year, ran well at Parks. So, I mean, and then the horse that, if I had to bet somebody in the race to beat Chotsky, the horse that I'm really high on of anybody in this race, the bottom horse is Fletcher's horse, Portos. I watched his last race when he broke his maiden by almost 11 lengths. I watched that race many times, and I just like what I saw. I like the way this horse moves. I like the way he galloped out in that race. He just kept going, absolutely destroyed his field. So, you know, before that, he was knocking on the door. You talk about a horse that's improving. His four starts, by the way, he finished fourth, third, second, and first. So, no place to go now except double up. But I think this is a really nice horse by Tappet out of a Tisnow mare. It's a Wertheimer horse, a beautiful gray horse. Like I said, moves very well. So you know he's breaking from the outside post here, but I'm kind of high on this horse. So I would imagine he'll probably go off second, maybe third choice at the most. But if anybody's going to beat Chotsky, again, I'm not that crazy about Chotsky. He can certainly win this race. He's not a bad horse. He's a pretty good horse. But I'm going to go with Portis in here.
Interesting. All right. I'm just excited for Jerry O'Dwyer to have you know, this opportunity. Here's Gary Barber again. So a chance for Gary to, you know, really kind of continue the momentum that was built last year. You know, I'm thinking of this. It reminds me, I do want to ask your final Eclipse thoughts as well. First time we're talking, obviously, since last Thursday night.
I already forgot who won.
Yeah, exactly. This feels here at the beginning of the year like Gary Barber's chance. We waited and pushed for Seth Klarman to get recognized, and it was a long slog to get him up on that stage. Gary Barber's turn feels like is in the offing. And,
well, he's all over the place now too. And that's the thing is that so many of these horses are owned by, you know, multi partnerships. I mean, you know, everybody's getting in with everybody now. You know, he's partners with a whole bunch of people in here.
Well, he's always done that. I mean, he's had a long running, you know, ties with Adam Wachtel, and you know, he's sort of the really in the same position, a similar position as Seth, where he's the, you know, he's the majority partner invariably in the horses.
What do you know about this Diane Day? I know absolutely nothing about her. She's the owner and trainer of this new commission. I mean,
we're going to have to find out some things. It's kind of fun, and I love these kinds of stories.
Georgia Bred. I mean, like you said,
it's great.
I know. I never heard of her. You know, her record this year is 0-0. So.
Well, it's her first start of the year. She won six races last year from 76 starts, and this is obviously, you know, her best horse. We'll find out how she came to, you know, that. Yeah. I can tell you that family, that Snow's image, and you know, certainly, you know, field commission as a, you know, as a stallion. Yeah, all right. I love these kinds of stories. And that family.
It stands to 2,500.
How about that? Which means you basically can get to him for nothing, invariably. But, you know.
It's a great story, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, great story.
You know,
great story.
Like, you know, Diane, who, you know, who's the owner and the trainer, a Georgia bred by a $2,500 stallion. And he's a good horse. You know, he's improving. His, you know, his speed figures are improving. He ran a 101 in the heft. And like I said, he got beat by a really good horse. In Monday Morning QB, finished almost three lengths ahead of the third horse, and he was flying at the end of it. You know, broke his maiden by 12 and a quarter lengths. And I like these kind of stories.
Yeah, very much.
And he had a bullet, two works back. He had a bullet work. He worked a minute and two at Park.
He's working crazy. He's working actually incredibly for Parks, for horses to be working 58-3.
Yeah, 58-3, the race before that. And the
crazy.
The race before that was 47 flat. A three straight bullet works.
Yeah. Yep. Well, we'll see. So, Tony can't join us today, but we'll see what Tony knows. She, you know, she must only have a couple of horses, a handful of horses.
Yeah.
We love
like
it.
Abner Adorno, you know. Not exactly a household name either.
No, he wins. He wins. He won 12% last year.
Yeah, in his own realm there. But I mean, most people don't know who he is. So I mean, still adds to the story. I'd love to see this horse run well.
That'd be great. Shift out to we'll come back to the final question with regarding the eclipses in a second. But let's talk about the race here and Thousand Words.
Before I get there, I just want to add one thing about Fordos.
Yeah,
before I knew he was running this race, I was starting to write that this was definitely a horse that I want to see drop back in distance. I mean, do you realize this horse is making his fourth start at a mile and an eighth already?
Yeah,
I mean that's unheard of for a young horse in January to already have run four times at a mile and an eighth. I mean, he made his first start at a mile and eighth in August. So, I mean, obviously, Plessy's got an agenda here running his horse long. But, you know, this is the kind of horse I would have loved to just seen cut back to one turn just to get some kind of sharpener in him. You don't want to see these horses get dulled. But, I trust Fletcher and see what he does here. But, okay, I just wanted to throw that in.
No, we love that, and I think who was it that we go back to that there was a Fountain of Youth when the Fountain was also a mile in it, those couple of years when it was a mile and an eighth, and I want to say that Dale and Mike Maker had Nick Zito had. If it was Morning Line, or was it? It was somebody that had run, and you and I talked about that extensively about you know how few horses had you know get a chance to come to the Derby with 3 mile and an eighth races already on their resumes, and I think it might have been Morning Line actually. It was who was the deep closer that Nick had right about then?
Well, Morning Line was a miler.
Then
I was the horse that got beat a nose in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile.
Who am I thinking of from of Nick's from that from about that era? Oh God!
What years are we talking about? I lose track.
Around the time of Morning Line,
That's what 2000. You know,
give or take. Here, I'm gonna tell you right away. It was Icebox is who I'm thinking of.
Icebox. I mean, Icebox should have won the Kentucky Derby.
Yep, got stuck.
Talk about a horse who was the best horse in the race. God, if you ask me, by the way, who had the worst trip of any horse I've ever seen in the Derby, it would be Icebox. You know, that horse was 10 lengths better than the Super Saver.
Yeah.
I mean, a horrible, horrible trip. He never really did much after that, but he should have won the Kentucky Derby. But he did. I think he won the Florida Derby, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
By a nose or something.
No, he won by like a nose over Mike Maker, over one of Mike Maker's Ramsey. I think it was a Ramsey horse that and the two of them. And we talked about it at the time. They had been running mile. They both had, I think, had 2 mile and an eighth races, back to back, or three even. And, it just rattles around. It's rather Pleasant Prince was the Maker horse.
Oh, wow. Jeez, that's really reach.
It was for those that haven't seen that, that was a thrilling, Florida Derby.
Yeah, well, yeah, Nick, I mean, Nick won so many Florida Derbies. He always had his horses ready for the Florida Derby. Always had them ready. He had a lot of horses that ran huge in the Florida Derby.
It's funny, considering we're talking about these 7/8 as a launching point for the 3-year-olds. Here's a horse. Nick brought him back after he broke his maiden at the Meadowlands. Yeah, on October 30th, he put him away for the winter, gave him a nice 90-day break, brings him back in a mile and an eighth allowance, and he wins that with Johnny. Then in the Fountain, he was fifth with Joe Bravo, and then he wins the Florida Derby with Jose Lascano. And you and I talked extensively about the 3 mile and an eighth races coming into the Kentucky Derby.
You don't see it. That's what I mean. This horse is going to have 4 in January. I mean, what do you got? How do you dig all this stuff up on Icebox so fast? What do you got?
I pulled up his career chart.
Ambidextrous. You can talk and type at the same time.
You know, didn't do much. He never won again after the Florida Derby. Second.
No, I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah.
But like when you do that, it's hard to keep a horse going. If you're not going to give him a sharpener, I don't want Portos, who actually he looks like this horse. He's very similar looking. I don't want him to turn into another Marconi. Plessy did the same thing with Marconi. He just ran him mile and eighth, and he turned out to be a nice horse. But at a mile and 3/4, as a 4-year-old, eventually
that's true.
He was able to stretch out and win. He became a
marathoner,
a distance horse.
Right.
So
a stayer.
Yeah, good stayer. But he never turned into a derby horse because he was too slow. Because you just keep running a mile.
That'll
mile
happen.
Mile and eight. Especially at Aqueduct when they go 154 and 153 in the fall when it's just so slow. So you're building up a hell of a foundation, but these horses are just not sharp enough.
No, it they're grinders, and it happens. And it's funny, considering how much time we spend during the lead up to the classic season, it's gotten easier and easier to spot those kinds of horses, it's easier to differentiate the closing sprinters that are going to end up being better off going 7/8 to a mile, one turn. And you can see the ones early on that are just have cases of the slows. They're just, they're just not going to be brilliant enough, to compete. At the highest level at this time of year. I mean, it doesn't mean that as more mature horses. And frankly, Steve, there's more evidence flying in the face of the ridiculous, constant braying about the way we're breeding horses. In fact, there's so many more stamina influences and middle distance plus types that are at stud. Not to mention the turf stallions at stud, that it's just to keep hearing that nonsense, just you shake your head.
And you know what's crazy is that I'll look at a horse's pedigree now, and I'll study the pedigree, and I'll say, wow, a lot of stamina here and stamina there. I like this. I like that. And then, you can't help it. I don't use it anymore. But, if you go to Pedigree Query and you go to Equine Line, they always give you the dosage. And I'm looking at these horses with these incredible pedigrees, and I see they got a dosage of 8. I said, what? it's all totally meaningless now. You basically look at it. I think we've got many more stamina influences now than we have speed influences in these pedigrees.
There's no doubt about it.
And, you talk about these kind of horses that just keep running along. I tell you one, ironically, the racetrack that seems to produce the most horses that turn out to be slow horses is Churchill Downs. You know, I see all these maiden races on, you know, on the big two-year-old day, and a lot of these horses, you'd say, oh, you really won at Churchill Downs. You know how many Kentucky Derby winners won at Churchill Downs? Very, very few. It's very, a lot of these horses that you see that run at Churchill Downs, they don't turn out to be Derby winners.
And that's an interesting. We'll revisit that.
Let's check and see how many Kentucky Jockey Club.
That's a very interesting story. You got me intrigued. Yeah,
they would have an advantage. But they say, oh, he loves Churchill Downs. He won this, but they turn out to be slow. I don't know. I don't know why.
Well, we're just so far removed from that speedy precocity that used to dominate the conversation, and it's such a thing of the past, and especially because of the way Churchill has weeded out or determined that the speed influences that the Trinnebergs of the world are not going to. You know, unless they are able to stretch out to some degree and accrue the points, they're not going to make the Derby field. And as a result, we've got a whole different scenario. I mean, people have been talking about this, ever since, we started to get patterns from the point system.
Well, the thing is, we don't have those horses anymore. Song and a Prayer and those kind of horses that, they're not going to win Derby. They don't belong in their promises fulfilled. You know, you look at these horses, they've,
He's actually the last promises. Steve is well. Promises is the last is really of recent vintage. He's really the only one that you can think of that was a quote unquote speedball type that ultimately did well enough. I mean, and certainly acquitted himself nicely routing in the 3 year old. Portion of the season when he was doing it, but then of course when Dale turned him back, that's what he wanted all along.
Yeah, because I remember the one race that always used to produce a lot of horses that won the race that were pure speed horses was always the Fountain of Youth. The Fountain of Youth was like so many times it's won, and you don't see that much anymore. Fountain of Youth is now is being won by legitimate Derby horses, but it used to be, it's still not up to obviously Florida Derby standards, but. It used to be where you'd get all these horses that would win the Fountain of Youth, and you say, all right, fine, but he's not winning the Kentucky Derby. There's no way he's going to win the Kentucky Derby. And I don't see that anymore. But I still think that there's a handful of sprint stakes that should have points, because they're not going to produce. Let's put it this way. If a horse wins the San Vicente, or a horse wins the Swale, and he happens to be a sprinter, that doesn't get him into the Derby. He's still going to have to do something. He's going to have to stretch out and do something. I mean, how many of those horses are going to really run in the Derby? It's going to be negligible. But it's still a great, trainers are afraid to run in these races because they don't want to waste a race that has no points. You got to have faith in your horse, which Jimmy Jerkins does. Jimmy Jerkins says, oh, look, I could run in the Holy Bull. He says, but I don't want to run him two turns. So I want to get a sharpener in him. It's old school, just the way, he takes you after Allen. I don't want to get a sharpener in him. He's got faith in his horse. Let's put it this way. If he runs in this race and runs, a good second or a good third, doesn't pick up any points, and let's say he doesn't run well in the Fountain of Youth and Florida Derby, then he doesn't belong in the Kentucky Derby anyway. But if a speed horse, let's say one of these speed horses wins this race, you think they're going to come back and win the Florida Derby? They're not going to get enough points to run the Derby anyway. It happened one time a couple of years ago, and everybody panicked. Oh, we don't want this horse in the Derby.
You know what's funny? And I've just pulled up the Fountain of Youth. There was an era after Thunder Gulch. Thunder Gulch, of course,
I'm talking about.
Well, after that, Built for Pleasure, Pulpit, Lil's Lad, Vicar, High Yield, Song and a Prayer, Booklet, Trust in Luck, mm-hmm. the epic, read the footnotes, June, 2nd of June, knockdown drag out, which was unbelievable. Then High Fly, First Samurai, Scat Daddy, Cool Coleman. Then Quality Road, Escondorea, Soldat, Union Rags, Orb.
You see how it's changing?
That's yeah, I mean. But yeah, yeah.
You know it's changing.
Wildcat.
Now you got the different horses. But the first horse you mentioned, I think he might have paid like $70 or something. Built for Pleasure. I think he paid a monster price. But those are the kind of horses that were winning every year. Now look at the names of the last few names. All of a sudden,
Mohaman.
Not those kind of horses anymore. They're Derby horses.
Yeah, well, yes and no. I mean, you had Union Rags and of course, Escondorea, God knows
Derby
what. The Derby horse. He would have been a Triple Crown the horse.
Yeah.
Sold at Union Rags Orb. Then Wildcat Red, who was a little bit of a middle distance type. You had a DQ. Orb, yes. Mohaman.
Mohaman was Derby. He was a Derby favorite.
But then, of course, his best performance was the Met Mile.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he won the Remsen as a 2-year-old. I mean,
that's true.
And then he won the Holy Bull, and he won the Fountain of Youth. He was a Derby favorite, the early Derby favorite.
Gunnavera and Promises Fulfilled.
He wasn't one of those kind of horses, but I'm just saying now all of a sudden the horses you're mentioning are more Derby horses than the earlier bunch you started mentioning, the Built for Pleasures and the Song and the Prayers and those kind of horses.
Steve, here's a goofy thing, and maybe it was, I don't know if they were doing the renovation. There was the year the Quality Road won, they ran it at a mile.
Oh, that sounds familiar, yeah.
It's the craziest thing. A mile and a 16th, and then it went to a mile and an eighth when High Fly won.
You know, I think that was the year where they had the tents up and they were.
Maybe.
They were redoing the racetrack.
Then it was a mile and an eighth for two more years, Escondorea and Soldat, and now since it's been a mile and 16th.
And you got to remember too, you mentioned Quality Road. Quality Road, he was the Derby favorite, you know, before he got a quarter crack.
Yeah.
You know, and they took him away from Jimmy Jerkins. But I mean, he was the Derby favorite, and we saw what he went on to be. He certainly could have won the Derby.
Interesting. We'll save that for Fountain. I guess we already had our Fountain of Youth. I'll just take this. we'll cut this up, and we'll have our Fountain of Youth preview this. Steve, let's quickly get into, because I know time's going to get short for you, the Bob Lewis and 1,000 Words, but 'Tis a Magician, who've been looking forward to. We talked to Mandela weeks ago. High Velocity and Royal Act, and things are. You also got Encoder for Sadler and Costa Aronis, and Zimba Warrior coming out of a solid performance, decent performance in the Sham.
Well, I mean, obviously, like most of the races Bob Baffert runs in, you know, he's got either the big favorite or the two big favorites, you know, which he will have here, and he looks like he's on paper that he has his field over barrel. But the one horse you mentioned, I texted Dick about this horse, and before I even knew that he was even running in the Lewis, this was after he broke his maiden in his sixth start. He had run second three times in a row, he was running decent numbers, and he was running against some pretty decent horses. He was second to Honor AP, who certainly could be any kind. But what I really liked about his last start. You know, you can just see he's a horse that's just getting better. He's a Tiz now out of a Dixie Union mare. He's got a lot of bred for stamina. It did take him a while to mature. But if you watch his last race, what I really loved about him is that not only did he, track the pace and, grow away in the stretch, but galloping out, that horse was 10 lengths in front. Galloping out. He won by 2 3/4, 2.5. And he's 10 lengths galloping out, and Victor Espinosa could not pull this horse up. It was feet in the dashboard, and the horse's mouth is open, and Espinosa's pulling back on the reins, trying to get him to pull up. And I really like what I saw. And again, a lot of these Tiznows take them a while to develop. And, Dick never rushes his horses anyway. as it is, this horse came out in his first start and ran second to Wrecking Crew, who's a pretty nice horse. But, you know, I think he had to, you know, work out a little, you know, a few issues. And I like the fact that Dick had put the, you know, blinkers on him and then took him back off again. But this is an improving horse. I'm not saying he's going to beat Thousand Words or even High Velocity. But if this horse finishes in the money and is, you know, within two or three lengths of these horses, and I'm not saying he can't win, but if he runs a good race, you know, watch this horse. I think this horse is a vastly improved horse. Listen, let's put it this way. If you start looking at the Equibase speed figures, he's got a higher, his last race was a higher number than both Thousand Words and High Velocity has ever run. So, you know, speed-wise, he's right there. But listen, Thousand Words will be tough to beat. What I like about this horse is that he's not your typical Baffert horse. He's not a brilliant horse. He's a fighter. He showed that in his first start. We ran a game race, but the next race was an incredible race. Where he had to put High Velocity away, who was on his inside. And Flavian Pratt turned in one of the most brilliant rides ever that I've seen in a long time, where he hit him right-handed to bring him in, you know, I think we discussed this, to look High Velocity in the eye, put him away. And as soon as he put him away, Anno Dor was like eight paths outside of him, way out in the middle of the track, and he switched to his left hand and brought him all the way out to look Anno Dor in the eye and held him off to win by a neck. So, you know, for a horse, you know, in his second start, jumping from 6.5 to a mile and a 16th. So you start looking at this horse. I don't know how far he wants to go. I mean, he's by Pioneer of the Nile. Pioneer of the Nile, yeah, obviously he can produce, he can sire distance horses, but he's out of a Pomeroy mare. You know, Pomeroy's by Boundary. That's all speed. So again, not 100% sure how far he wants to go. Flavian Pratt's going to have, you know, he's again, like last year, he's going to have so many horses to choose from. He's got so many Derby horses this year. High Velocity gets Rosario, which I like. I think Rosario maybe take him back a little off the lead this time instead of going head and head like he did last time and like he did when he won the Bob Hope. But you know, you look at him, you know, he's also like Tiz Magician, he's out of a Dixie Union mare by Quality Road. Let's put it this way, I know after the Los Al Futurity, you know, Baffert emailed me absolutely gloating over 1,000 words, saying that, you know, he may have his next star. He absolutely loved this horse. But before the race, all he talked about was High Velocity.
I know.
He just completely forgot about him after the race. But before the race, he kept saying High Velocity was his best horse, and he loves High Velocity. That's all he talked about is High Velocity. So I'm not going to throw him out, because if he comes back and wins this race, he's going to start raving about him. So, you know, I'm curious to see what he does. He worked him 6 furlongs and 1.12 and 4. You know, it was a good strong work. I'm just curious to see what he does with Rosario up and see if he takes him back off the pace. You know, as far as the other horses, they're all guesses, because, you know, the only horses that look like they could be any threat to these three horses are horses that are, you know, that are coming off the grass. So we'll have to see how good they are. Zimba Warrior on the outside, you know, he's coming off a fairly good race to Authentic. He was third, but he was well beaten. He got beat 9 lengths. Same thing with High Velocity. He got beat almost 6 lengths behind a High Velocity. So, I mean, I don't know if he's really in these horses' class. But, you know, if you want to take a chance, you go to a horse like Encoder, who's coming off the Eddie Logan victory, coming off the grass. So you can go to a horse like Royal Act, who finished fifth in the race. But, he's an American Pharoah. And I know they've been running them all on the grass. But, you know, obviously American Pharoahs are going to handle the dirt. And he's got dirt in his pedigree. So, you know, we'll have to see how good he is. You know, he won first time out at Del Mar going a mile. So, you know, if you want to take a shot to try and beat the favorites, you got to try something bold. You got to take a shot that one of these two horses are going to love the dirt. But other than that, you know, it's the two Baffert horses. And if I had to bet somebody here, I definitely would have been bet Tis the Magician off his last start. If you get a chance, you know, watch him. Not even so much at the finish. Watch him after the race. What's the way he gallops out in that race?
Yeah, I saw the race, and I was okay. I was on hand for the Los Al Futurity, it was fun. And this horse will, you see him in person, you'll be impressed. Regarding, you know, Pomeroy's Pistol was a very nice stake sprinter for Amy Tarrant, and
yeah,
I mean, she never, I don't think she ever went past probably 7 furlongs or a 1-turn mile, but there is, you know, there,
well,
is,
that's what I'm saying, there's a question about, you know, about how far 1,000 words
we'll have to take it from Pioneer of the Nile, and there is, you know, there.
Yeah, but
it's actually
horses with speed too, so you know he can go. You know, he can produce horses that can stay, and he can produce horses that have. The thing about this Magician that's interesting is that, you know, he's owned in part by this MyRacehorse.com, so that'll make it interesting to have all these fans. You know, he's in partnership with Spendthrift, who actually bought the horse at the sale.
Right.
But there's MyRacehorse.com, it's always interesting. It'll put a fan interest in here, you know, so he's probably got about 500 owners.
the thing with 1,000 words is that from a physical standpoint, he doesn't look like a horse physically that is going to be limited as a router. So that's the positive. I mean, he's a big rangy thing, and I when I saw him actually coming back, I think it was when I remarked to Baffert. I said, "Wow, look at that! This is like an aircraft carrier." He should only improve from here.
Like I said, for Baffert to email me, you know, without the provocation, to start raving about a horse, like it took him this race to realize what he had. But he must have been impressed as well. How about the Oboff family? I mean, to have him here on the West Coast and have Dennis's Moment back east, I mean, that's a pretty powerful 1-2 punch on both sides of the country,
to say the least. Very much so. Very much so. Steve, a couple of minutes before we wrap. It's going to be a very fun Saturday, obviously, coast to coast. Any final thoughts regarding the Eclipse wrap?
No, except for the my favorite. I basically fast forwarded through most of it. I really didn't want to, but I put it on. I DVR'd it so I could fast forward it. But I knew right off the bat, you know, when I don't know if you noticed this, by the way, but when they introduced the three girls or the three young ladies, the person who introduced it, instead of saying your host, said your horse.
I did, you know what? I actually, it's funny.
And
corrected himself. I did hear that.
Yeah,
now that I'd forgotten about it, but you're right.
But he corrected himself. But
yeah.
It's funny. He says, your hosts for the night are. You know, I thought, okay, that's where we're going. But I wasn't in the mood to listen to speeches. And, you know, I basically knew who was going to win all the categories, and they did. And, you know me. Awards don't really interest me that much. I don't know. I don't even know if there were any. Were there any highlights?
Seth Klarman certainly, and I also.
Well, every time I looked up, he was making a speech.
Well, he saved the owner, particularly the owner. He actually, knowing that he was, or expecting that he was going to be up three times, he segmented it, and I thought did brilliantly. But it was the owner award when he really, made those pointed remarks, and they were so well received. And as I discussed yesterday with Alan Foreman, I think it's plugging into what feels like the best attempt in recent memory for industry-wide coalescence. And so I thought that was a highlight. I remarked to somebody that I thought that Bill Heiligenbrot's speech, that it was – it was the Willis Horton moment of this year. It was so folksy and homey, and you know, they have been.
But he deserved it. He's been in the game so long.
And I'm going to say something that I think I've hinted at it on air before. The Heiligenbrots almost left the business, and had run into some issues and pared back. And Steve Asmussen was instrumental in keeping them in the business, and he deserves a lot of acknowledgement for that. And how
I think he deserves a lot of acknowledgement too by sticking with Asmussen when he went through his issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know,
I like the concept. What they did by showing all the horses in their second careers, the photograph.
Oh, it was wonderful. That was a huge hit. That was tremendous.
Yeah, I thought that was that was nice. I liked seeing that.
Yeah, I agreed. That was a home run. People were excited to see their own horses and everybody. I think if they do that on a regular basis, there'll be widespread submissions. I didn't realize until it was too late. I mean, there were a couple of our horses that are out doing things. We got a polo pony out there. We've got a barrel racer. Yeah, the show ring. They've been more successful off the track than they were on the track. There's a job for every horse, almost. Not that I know people say that, but it's not entirely true, but it's mostly true.
Yeah, so I mean that was nice, but you know, it's, you know, like I said, as far as the awards go, you know, listen, all, you know, the winners were well deserved, but you know, they're all really expected.
Yeah,
I don't
there
know
was no.
Chris Warner is going to be one of the most remembered of the horses of the year. You know, he deserved to win, but he certainly, you know, not like a horse like American Pharoah or Gunrunner, or you know, I mean, horses that you're going to probably remember for a while. And I don't say that because he's a grass horse. I say that a lot because the majority of his races were early in the year. Then he had one race in the summer and one race at the end of the year. But of all of his races, every one of them but two were in January and February and March, you know, very early in the year. So
yeah.
he thought it was, through most of the year, he was out of sight, out of mind. You know, from, you know, most of May and June and July, he was not even around. And then he comes back and he wins the Arlington Million. And then he's gone September, October, into November. So, yeah, you know, you hardly knew he was there. You know, so, again, nothing against the horse. But, you know, he's not a horse that, you know, come in. That's why I was surprised that he won the Vox Populi Award, to tell you the truth.
I didn't think enough people really
knew much about him or really talked much about him all through the course of the year.
Well, it was strange.
People didn't vote because they were voting for, you know, the horse of the year instead of Vox Populi.
Yeah, it was I mean, I found that odd. I didn't pay a lot of attention to that, but it was a little odd because he's not his story is uplifting and
the story's good. The story's
you know, a horse that, yeah. that a lot of people would have either tried to rush through, but, you know, that Seth, Klarman said,
yeah,
take as much time.
14,
yeah.
14 months, I believe he was out.
Yeah.
And had
yeah.
all kinds of problems. And,
last year,
to the guy who had him.
Last year, Steve, in general, the theme, everywhere you look, there were horses that, outfits that were rewarded for patience. What about Preservationist? You know, who obviously, you know, the last trimester, you know, was gone from the landscape. But, you know, what Jimmy Jerkins did and Centennial did with him to be as patient as they were, to be rewarded like they were.
Well, the thing is, he had several gaps. You know, it's
yes.
like. Yeah, he was like 5 years old, and he had like three starts. You know, he kept running once or twice, and then he was gone for, you know, 8 months, and then he was gone for 12 months, and, you know, he had you know, he had all these, he's, instead of one long, you know, time off from the racetrack, one injury, you know, he had several different issues. So that was good coming back. And again, you know, you start looking at popularity and also even a championship. You look at the Philly Belvoir Bay. I would say 75 to 80% of the people did not know her story until after she won the Breeders' Cup. I mean, if you look at all the people that watched the race, that, how many people really knew her story about, you know, surviving the fire?
Right.
The story came out afterwards. And then, as soon as the story came out, people started voting for her. She finished second in the Vox Populi. But, I mean, how popular? I mean, she was popular for a month after the race.
Well, she would have been.
Anything about her before that.
Yeah, she would have been actually that. She would have been a nice selection.
Yeah, it was a good story. But like I said, she only became popular after people found out the story. If she had not won that race, nobody would have won that. But yeah, once you know the story, you say, "Wow, that is." But I guess this is the question of what the word popularity, how you interpret the word popularity, you know, over the course of the year or something you find out at the end of the year, you know, a story after the fact. I don't know. It's up to each person's opinion on how to determine that.
No, it depends also where people's focus is in terms of their media outlets and what they're attuned to, you know, and how much of it is, you know, is those, you know, being just open to and finding those kinds of stories. And they, and believe me, they're out there, obviously. And with this landscape where you have so many people that, you know, have an interest and they write and they have a way to circulate their work and, you know, get it noticed and appreciated. So some of these stories really come from grassroots. You know, this was obviously a much bigger and literally an international, you know, given the fire and the horror involved, you know, this is a story that, you know, people, much like the Australia, I mean, even though the Australia thing is so much more widespread, but the animal.
Well, that was crazy, you know, with Winx winning 2 years ago. I mean, basically Americans, you know, voted for her. You know, they voted for a horse they never saw.
Yeah.
You know, they had to see her at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
the run. You know, she became the most popular horse in the United States. Who not only did not run in the United States, but nobody in the United States ever saw her in the flesh.
Yeah, that's a great point, and which actually is a real compliment to, you know, to horse players and fans of the sport in general. That,
yeah,
that,
well, listen,
some people's imagination was captured.
People to stay up until 12, 1 o'clock. You know, obviously shows up. How popular she was. Are people going to stay up that late to watch your horse race?
Well, and Dick Powell's going to join us next for those that stay up and play Hong Kong. And, of course, a wild situation this weekend.
I know.
I mean, this was the craziest thing ever. 8,000 fans? 8,000 people let in or whatever the number was because they just wanted the health crisis with this coronavirus out there.
It's getting nuts. It's getting
very
crazy.
Scary. Very scary. Steve, finally, we'll wish you a wonderful weekend. And
thank you. You too. Have a
with the baby.
Stay there.
The baby. I get the sense that the baby almost. I saw a picture the other day. It looked like he was getting ready to go to a college interview already.
The pictures of his first haircut on Facebook.
I did see those.
I looked at. I said, "Oh my God, he looks so he looks so much older with his haircut." You know, he had to look. He had the beaver, Leave It to Beaver haircut, you know, with the hair coming down, and he had the little the duck tail in the back that was going down his neck and everything. Now he's got the hair, you know, combed to the side, and I said, "Oh God, look at him! He looks so much older." You know, he's just getting so big. Well, listen, February 22nd, it'll be 2.
How about that, boy? Oh boy. Well, and that's about the due time that we're going to be. Tina and I are going to become grandparents around a little bit after that. Shouldn't be long.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
congratulations.
We're very excited. Very excited.
Oh, fantastic.
the baby, the baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look at the baby. Look at the baby.
Steve, thank you for a great hour plus, and it should be really Saturday should be a lot of fun. And I'm the beat the host guy, so I gotta sift through those Gulfstream and Santa Anita races, and
I'll
include them. Steve Haskin, everybody, thank you. With Derby Dozen, probably gets a shake up for next week, I imagine. Take a break. We're at the bottom of the hour. We're 90 minutes in after that literally Groundhog Day start, which made me smile. Dick Powell joins us next. We're at Santa Anita. I can't say I'm live at Clocker's Corner because I'm in the press box, which I never am. But the line wasn't running over there. What are you going to do? Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states. Open account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American fall crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our Racehorse Development Fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Join us this Saturday at Santa Anita as we continue down the Kentucky Derby Trail with top three-year-olds in the Grade 3 Robert B. Lewis Stakes at a mile and 1/16. We'll also have the Grade 2 San Pasquale at a mile and 1/8, an important prep for the Santa Anita Handicap on March 7th. And Turf Marathoners will go a mile and 1/4 Saturday in the Grade 2 San Marcos. In addition to great racing, we've also got free infield general admission and parking each weekend via Gate 6 off of Colorado Place. And make plans to be here early this Sunday. We'll have a special big game Sunday early first post time of 11 a.m. with admission gates opening at 9 a.m. We'll also have free general admission on Sunday. Come for the races and stay for the game as we'll have drink specials and a free $3,000 football contest. That's all on Big Game Sunday. First post time on Saturday is at 12:30, Santa Anita. Great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Step aside.
We'll be right back.
Races. About 25 minutes to the top of the hour. This is another one from that fabulous Camel Fat album with Jim Cooke. We haven't played the other one in a while. With Jake Bugg, Be Someone. Really good. Really good. All courtesy of BBC Radio 1. Can't be beat when you're looking for the musical side.